Blog Talk Radio. Justus with a song called Genesis. Really dig that track. Of course, you guys are listening to the Draconian Vampire Tunnel is closed to repairs. I'm your host, DJ Frankie Flash Metro. And of course, if you ever find yourself standing in front of a jungle-themed alien fortress with only a spread gun or a laser, and your partner's already falling out because, well, he's used his last life, hey, think about us. And on that note, we got some great stuff on the program tonight, actually. Davey Allen makes a return. Of course, we got Roy Sopp is back. Joy Division, Mr. Iggy Pop and the Stooges, and the XX, new addition to the Draconian Vampire Tunnel. A very, very pleasurable one. I probably listened to this song like 8 to 10 times today, maybe. I'm not sure. I have to check with the Draconian Fact Research Team on that. Man, I don't even know how to get started with you guys. How do I get started with you? How do I hype things up? Davey Allen, song is called Tomahawk. Actually, it's a dual song. It's a double. I'm going to give you guys two songs for one. This is Davey Allen. First song is called Tomahawk. Second song is called Come On, Do the Freddy. Right here on Draconian Vampire Tunnel is close to repairs. Number to call in, of course, 805-856-2808.
Thank you.
Davey Allen and the Arrows, Tomahawk, come on, do the Freddy. If that shit doesn't make you want to have a biker bongo party, fuck. Frankly, I don't even know what will. On that note, Mr. Davey Allen's actually inspired me to do something a little bit outside of the norm. We have tried to offer prizes on this show before, and of course we do have two very lucky recipients of the Red Fez prizes that we gave out earlier in the year. I've actually come into some pretty cool CDs here by Mr. John Bennett. I've actually got an audiobook entitled Tire Grabbers by Pacific Northwest poet and author Mr. John Bennett, and of course Rug Burn by Mr. John Bennett as well. I don't have a CD player because you get a CD player and that leads to buying a television, and then of course television leads to buying pocket pussies, and that just doesn't go well for anybody. So for any of you listeners out there that are interested, per Mr. John Bennett, I'm going to lay it on you if you are, no, if you appreciate it. Mr. Patrick Simonelli, I know that you appreciate Mr. John Bennett, so perhaps that you will. But I'm going to have to make it part of a trivia, as I did the last prize. So, you guys can go to the www.facebook.com, the www.facebook.com. Yeah, that's right, I said it. You can go there and type in the Literary Underground in the search bar. And, of course, if you can, this is where you can put in the answer for the trivia question. And whoever answers this trivia question first, I'll actually give you one of two John Bennett audiobooks or CDs. The question being, Davey Allen, how many biker movies did Davey Allen write the music score for during his career? That's the question. Do you have the answer? If so, go to Facebook, type in the Literary Underground in the search bar. Go ahead and give that. We'll give you out these two John Bennett CDs that we got here. So, that being said, we actually have a caller on the line, and I'm going to bring them in, see what perhaps they have the answer. Caller, do you happen to know how many biker movies did Davey Allen and the Arrows actually write the music score for?
Fuck no. I don't know anything about that, actually.
Well, it was worth the
time. I don't even know who the fuck that is.
Yeah, right on, man. Sweet. So we just dropped some bombs on Mr. Nuwamba Flamingo, putting him on the spot right off the bat. How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, man. I know a couple things about pocket pussies, though.
Oh.
I do know about that. I do know about pocket pussies, plastic pussies, various sex toys, but I don't really know a lot about biker movies.
I
apologize for that.
Yeah, no problem, man. Not everybody's a biker enthusiast, you know. It's okay. It's no problem.
I'm really not a biker enthusiast. But, I mean, I have nothing against bikers, though. People
right.
want to be bikers, and they want to do crystal meth and shoot people and stuff. That's their business.
Yeah. You know what? I couldn't agree more. To be honest with you, the only reason I'm not in a biker gang is because they're predominantly racist.
Yeah, that makes me a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah,
because I'm very misanthropic, so I kind of hate everybody. I hate all human beings. So like to just kind of pick out one or two types of human beings, it kind of bothers me. So,
yeah, it's kind of stupid, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't get with that.
Oh, I feel you, man. Are there many biker gangs in Asia that you've seen, sir?
I don't know, man. There are gangs. There are violent gangs called triads. And they do some pretty ill shit. But they don't ride motorcycles, really, like in the way, you know, in America they have such biker gangs. There's not really such a thing. At least I don't know about it. Maybe Japan has a Hell's Angel chapter, something like that. But they don't have that in other parts of China that I have been to.
I know that I have heard about scooter gangs in certain parts of the world, in Europe. I'm not sure if Asia is like one of those places. You haven't seen a lot of kids on scooters, like the Karate Kid. You remember Karate Kid 2?
No, actually bicycles. They have
bicycles.
Yeah, they ride bicycles, man. They're too fucking poor. to afford scooters, a lot of them, so they ride around on bicycles.
Yeah.
And get down. Yeah, they get down and do some pretty crazy stuff.
Oh. That just gives a whole new meaning to biker gang right there.
Yeah, that's right. And I have more respect for those kind of biker gangs because they got to put a lot more work into that. I mean, it's easy to just be on a motorcycle and ride a motorcycle. To ride a bicycle, man, you have to pedal it, and that's a lot more work.
For real.
So, somebody doing that, that's hardcore.
Fucking A, man. Damn, man. Nuwamba, I'm glad you're here. Do you want to hang out with us for a little bit? Maybe find some stuff that you could share with us, sir?
Yeah, man, I got something to read, man. So whatever you want, dude. I got to read something, man.
All right, cool. How about after this next song, and we'll bring you in and let you. I definitely want to hear it. So fucking hey.
Oh, cool, man. Well, I'm happy to. Yeah, play another song. I'm digging on the music you're playing.
Right on, right on. Coming up next, we've got this is the XX. Song is entitled Infinity. Right here on the Draconian Vampire Tunnel, which is closed to repairs but open for ridicule, judgment, and. Whatever else you got. We'll be right back.
I've seen it in your fans are the hindrance to many a burgeoning preschool artist. He becomes the Gargamel among the Smurfs in his class. Smashing every Lego village in his path, he would rather draw with a firm turd from his diaper. At least that shit sticks to the wall.
That was the XX, exactly as I said it. The and two X's with Infinity. God damn, that song reminds me so much of Chris Isaak's, what the fuck is that song, Chris Isaak, I wanna fall in love, I love that shit. Actually, the XX is a band actually started by four teenagers from West London that are finally old enough to drink. Two best friends since they were toddlers. Some of their influences are wide range, such as the Pixies, the Kills, Mariah Carey, and Aaliyah. Matt, props for that one. Some of their older fans compare them to artists that they've never heard of, such as the Cockatoo Twins. And to be honest with you, that sounds kind of gay when you add it all up, but somehow it works. When XX, album XX, came out in 2009, several sources recommended it as great sexy time music. And I couldn't agree more. I'm feeling very sexy. I'm smoking horny goat weed and playing the XX. I'm feeling sexy time, man. Nuamba, what are you? How you doing, man?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm pretty good, man. And that song you're talking about by Chris Isaak, that's Wicked Game.
Yeah.
That's a great fucking song. Yeah.
It is, right?
That's a great song, yeah. Wicked Game.
Oh, it is.
That is a fucking great song. I really like that song. And that did kind of remind me of that song as well.
Yeah. It's got that really long drawn out guitar riff, especially like at the end when it was building. It was like, bow, 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 bow. I love that shit, man. It's fucking awesome.
It's very haunting, too. It's very haunting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very haunting kind of feel, like the way that Wicked Game also has.
Yeah.
It's very haunting.
Yeah. I love Wicked Games. Wicked Games, man. Speaking of which, you got something to read, right?
I do, actually. And there's a little sexy time in this as well.
Nice.
So I'll read it. It's I don't know where it came from, but it's a little bit strange. Maybe you'll enjoy it. Maybe not. I don't know. But I'll read it. It's called Hitler's Deal with God. Stephen met me at a train station outside Portland. I thought he'd show up in a car or at least a motorcycle, but instead he waited alone in the parking lot holding a rickshaw. A rickshaw, I asked as I opened my umbrella to shield myself from the cool Oregon mist. Stephen didn't answer and just puffed away on the cigarette dangling from his lips. He craned his neck towards the rickshaw, and I got in. He pulled me via rickshaw for what seemed like miles. We went through alleys, busy downtown intersections, and even the breakdown lane of US 30. Finally, we got to an Austrian-themed restaurant somewhere in a dodgy-looking section of the city. Vagrants and meth addicts were all over the streets. They scowled at us and whispered amongst themselves as Stephen parked the rickshaw behind an overturned pickup truck in the restaurant's driveway. I stepped out of the rickshaw and Stephen gave me a piggyback ride inside. Inside, the place was covered in Nazi flags and Hank Williams Jr. memorabilia. All the tables and seats were wooden. The restaurant's temperature was freezing cold. It smelled of smoked ham. A hunchback waitress in a bright red dirndl floated over to us like a ghost. She asked us in an Austrian-accented German what we wanted to eat. Stephen didn't respond. I told her that I wanted some schnitzel and beer. Instantly after ordering, the hunchback waitress vanished into the air, and a plate of schnitzel, French fries, and a glass of beer appeared on the table, though there were no utensils. So I scooped up the schnitzel with my hands and bit off a chunk. The meat was tender but didn't taste like meat. It was sweet, very sweet, almost as if it were sugar. It dissolved in my mouth without me chewing, and suddenly all I saw was purple, bright purple blobs of light everywhere. I felt myself spinning in circles and became lightheaded. The next thing I knew, I was wearing lederhosen and riding on the back of a flying polar bear, gliding over the snow-capped peaks of what looked to be the Austrian or German Alps. The polar bear flew me to a ski resort nestled in a valley. It plopped me down gently on the tough frozen ground and then calmly walked over to a group of Japanese tourists, broke out an Uzi and shot them all dead, snatched a pair of skis from one of the bodies and took off down a steep slope nearby. I felt a tap on the shoulder and whirled around to see Steven standing behind me. A cigarette dangled from his lips. He again had the rickshaw. Instinctively, I jumped in and he pulled me up to a log cabin. When we arrived at the cabin, he halted the rickshaw and nodded his head towards the front door. I stepped out, turned a swastika-shaped knob, and went inside. Inside the cabin looked exactly the same as the restaurant back in Portland. Nazi flags and Hank Williams Jr. memorabilia everywhere, except it was hot and humid instead of cold and smelled of stinky French cheese instead of smoked ham. The hunchback waitress was nowhere to be found. Rather, what appeared to be Adolf Hitler and George W. Bush were atop one of the wooden tables. They were both naked, and Hitler was slowly fucking Bush up the ass. Hitler's head twisted around like in the movie The Exorcist, and he flashed vampire fangs at me. A prepubescent ballerina with a diamond-studded tiara watched in the corner of the room, giggling and masturbating. Again, I felt a tap on my shoulder. It was Steven. He handed me a train ticket. The writing on it was in some oriental language, maybe Thai. There were no numbers. I opened my mouth to ask Steven about it, but he put a finger to his lips, shushed me, and nodded his head towards the fireplace in the corner near the ballerina. In it, there were Bibles burning. The billowing smoke was bright purple. A receiver from a payphone dropped down from the ceiling. I could hear ringing somewhere in the distance. Steven whispered in my ear that it was God. So I picked up the phone and said hello. There was no answer. And that's that.
Holy shit. I got to be honest with you, man. I've been fixated on the picture of Stephen Perkey giving you a piggyback ride for like the last 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about it, and you know, and then when you were talking about how he halted the rickshaw, I got an image of a lanky, gutter-cuddly Portlandite, or Portlandian, I guess you would call him, lifting up the rickshaw with you in it like Bruce Lee in, what was that movie? Shit. What was the Bruce Lee movie? The first one. What was that?
Not Into the Dragon.
No.
I don't know which one you're talking about, but
it was where his mask.
Yeah, like
yeah, yeah. I don't know, but yeah, that's what I was like fixated on, and then the Nazi shaped doorknob. That was an interesting. I like that. I mean, to be honest, I'm not saying I like Nazis, but I like the inclusion of that. That was a interesting little tidbit there. I've never seen a Nazi shaped doorknob or like a swastika shaped doorknob. I've never seen that.
Yeah, I've actually not either.
Yeah.
I just kind of imagined it.
Yeah. Shit. Damn, man. Okay. Good story, man. Good story.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I don't know where it came from. It's kind of one I came up with recently.
Well, you know, when you think about Stephen Perkey and you look at him and you think about Portland in the same sentence, sometimes you get a correlation of God and Hitler sometimes. And whichever side that falls on, I'm not really sure. You know, Portland might be like Hitler and Stephen Perkey might be like God or vice versa. I'm not sure. You might have the draconian fact research team research that. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows, man? Who knows? But, yeah, he inspired me. He inspired me. I don't know. I just I started thinking about him and meeting him in Portland, and that's just what happened.
Mm.
So I don't know, man. I don't know where that came from, but it's just what came out.
Yeah. Stephen Perkey, if you're listening out there, fuck you. And we love you, big guy. And we're going to play a song for you, actually. This is, you're going to hang out with us for a minute, right? You're not going anywhere.
Yeah, I'll be here. Yeah.
Cool. We're going to play, this is The Meters. The song is called Hey Pakiwe. I'm sure they can pronounce it better than I can. The number to call in, of course, 805-856-2808. And coming up after that, of course, is the Project U newsfeed. Yeah, we'll be right back. Project U newsfeed for June 19th and 20th of 2012, brought to you, of course, by Literary Underground. You guys can go to Literary Underground, www.theliteraryunderground.org for all your Draconia Vampire information, as well as information on your mother's medicine cabinet at Project U Radio. Today's newsfeed is actually, it's a really good one because we got three great publications that have released some new work. So I'll try to get through this as fast as possible. First up, of course, is the Durable Goods 2011 anthology that has just recently been put out on issue.com/durable goods. You guys can go there and check that out. A lot of great writers in that. April Michelle Bratton, Frank Reardon, Isaac Seal, who I haven't seen in a while and miss the fuck out of. Alethea Drimmer, Lynn Alexander, of course. A lot of great people in that one, so definitely go check that one out. Next up on the bat is Zygote In My Coffee, issue number 138, recently released. And of course, you guys know where Zygote In My Coffee is, and if you don't, just type it in Google. They've been around for a long time. You guys can go there, check out issue number 138, and definitely look for Zachary Maul in that one. Yeah, he's a good guy. And then third, but definitely not least, Unlikely Stories, recently released their newest issue, Unlikely Stories 4. Really great stuff in that one. You got some great artwork in there. Really great artwork by a gentleman by the name of... Shit, I've lost my notes here. Yeah, great artwork on the site. Go to www.unlikelystories.org and check out Skis 181 at episode 4. That dude's got some killer street art up there, so definitely go check that out, as well as some great articles there as well. All that, man, it's a lot of stuff, I know, but that's what we like to do. We like to overstimulate here at the Draconian Vampire Tunnel. Speaking of which, we're going to play one more track and then we'll be right back. This is The Ventures, live in Japan, 1965. Talk about sexy time. This song is called Penetration. We'll be right back.
Here's one called Penetration.
Crush on Chris Robertson. We were in algebra class with Lolly Widener and Jenny Feit, the well-known sluts who were not pretty or popular, but went to all the parties anyhow. I remember them because they were nice to me. Most people weren't back then. They even invited me to ditch school with them one day. We had grievous plans to get drunk and go to the lake or to a water park, but I don't think I made it to Burger King across the street before being caught immediately by the attendant security. when I called and tried to pretend to be my mother. I think of Lolly Widener and Jenny Fite most often when wondering what happens to 15-year-olds who are nonchalantly flunk algebra. Thank God there was no such thing as Facebook back then, or there would have been footage uploaded of them being gangbanged in the desert at a wild kegger party.
That was The Ventures with Penetration, live in Japan, 1965, actually. Really apropos, I think, for the evening. Of course, we're discussing Asian biker gangs. We're discussing sexy time and what have you. Nwamba, Japan, Penetration. These are subjects that you're, I think you're pretty familiar with, right? Or you're going to familiar, right?
Yeah. I am a bit familiar with Asian penetration, Asian hookers, Asian women penetrating Asian women, Asian hookers, different sex acts that they practice out here. It might not be too familiar in the United States. So, yeah, man, there's a lot of fun things to be had in Asia.
Nice. I'm happy for you. I'm like really jealous of you too, I have to say. You get to hang out and see vicious street gangs in Asia and get to see like really spiritual places like Tibet and whatnot, man. I'm envious. And congratulations, man.
Well, thank you, man. But, you know, speaking of Tibet, I want to mention that on the Meth Lab, we're going to have a special photo series of Tibet.
Ooh.
So there's already two photos posted from Tibet, and hopefully there'll be a couple more. So
nice.
We'll have a little photo series of Tibet. So if you want to see some actual first-person photographs taken of Tibet, check that out.
I'm on the way. Where can people find that at, sir?
methlab1234.blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the site, and yeah, there's lots of cool shit there. There's also a really cool piece by Doc Sigerson, man.
Oh yeah,
I just really fucking loved about him as a medical school dummy.
Oh, that's
an excellent piece.
Yeah, and it hurt me in my prostate to read it, man. I'm not even gonna lie.
Really?
Yeah.
I was actually kind of horny after reading it. Oh, I was aroused by that. That was funny.
Question, sir. It seems to me like, you know, since that made you horny, perhaps that you've had experience with Asian women milking the prostate. Is that the way you're... No.
Yeah, there was an experience I had in Hong Kong with a girl, and she did something to my prostate. I'm still not even sure what it was, but I'll just say it. I was having trouble shitting for about a week afterwards, and I don't know. It's not really an experience I want to delve into right now. Maybe someday I'll write about it, but you know,
yeah.
Awesome. I don't want to talk too much about that right
okay.
now.
Understandable,
very,
sir.
Very traumatic event.
Oh yeah. Well, it's traumatizing to hear the traumatization in your voice. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got a you don't happen to have another selection, do you, sir?
Yeah, actually I do. I have another thing.
Nice.
Is there time to read it?
Definitely is. Yeah.
All right, cool, man. Well, yeah, I'd like to read this. I'd like to hear you read something too as well.
I got something. Yeah. Sure.
All right, well, I'll read this if you read. I'll read this if you read something.
I gotta read something first.
I pull this shit up. So
okay.
I'll give you a second to take some shit out, and then I'll listen to you.
All right.
Let me read this shit. I got one right now.
Cool.
It's called Chuck Liddell, The Ostrich in the Rape Room. Our supervisor got a bird nose, long neck, and big fat butt that juts out when she walks. We call her the ostrich, but never to her face. The ostrich carries clipboards and deducts salaries. We poke our heads up from cubicles like gophers whenever she makes the rounds. Her appearance is always causing instant silence. Every day she seemingly appears from thin air. You never see her coming, but when she does, she'll often pull people into a back room. Usually those who go there never return, but if they do, they look like zombies, pale with dead eyes. We call it the rape room. No one really knows what happens back there. One day the ostrich went up to this new employee, maybe to bring him to the rape room. This guy was scary looking, fucking scary looking, looked kind of like Chuck Liddell. So we called him Chuck Liddell, but never to his face. Motherfucker had a mohawk, piercing and tattoos everywhere. Always sat alone during breaks. Looked like he just got out of prison. The ostrich said something to him, and he calmly peered around the room, stood up and wiped his nose with his shirt sleeve. The entire office was totally transfixed, fucking transfixed, and the already soft volume on the floor faded like someone had turned down a TV. I imagined Chuck Liddell throwing a right cross, connecting squarely to the, on the ostrich's big-ass bird nose, and her big-ass bird nose flying right off her face, and the bitch crumbling to the floor and hovering on hands and knees, searching for it like Mike Tyson circa 1990. But Chuck Liddell didn't throw a punch. Instead, he reached into his pocket, and I thought for a second he's going to whip out a gun and shoot everyone. But actually, he broke out a box of Tic Tacs and gave one to the ostrich and smiled, flashing rotted teeth, and sat back down. The entire room stayed quiet, everyone looking around at each other, perplexed. And the janitor, an old skinny black guy who was emptying out a wastebasket near Chuck Liddell's desk, stopped for a second and looked over at me with bloodshot eyes, and looked over at Chuck Liddell, and looked over at the ostrich. And he just chuckled a bit, shook his head, and went back to work.
Fucking A. I want to see that fight, man. I think that would sell, to be honest with you. We should maybe get a hold of Dana White if we can't get that happening. Sure.
Well, I'd love to see somebody punch her in the face, really.
Fucking
A. It would be very entertaining to see that.
Amen. Shit. I can't follow that, dude. Like, what am I going to follow that with? All right. I got two poems.
Oh, come on, man. You got some shit, man. You got some shit. Come on, man.
I got two. These are the two most recent ones I wrote. And I'll go ahead and read. I'll read the two really short ones. I'll read them real quick. And before I do, I did want to say we got 2 minutes left of live streaming. So number to call in if you want to continue listening to the show, because we still got plenty of stuff going on. 805-856-2808. First poem is called Mongoloid Bodai Migraine. A Mongoloid Bodai with a vicious migraine asked the question of his pupils if they had never noticed his accentuated brow muscles, his crooked teeth, the irrefutably horrible case of existential strabismus, his left eye facing west, his right eye staring at 20 men he once knew, begging and purging their karmic stains below in isolated narakas of their own design. One young student stepped forward and asked to answer his question with another, to which the Bodai complied. Have you ever heard the story of a man with 20 names meeting the man with one? The young boy asked. No, replied the Bodai. The student summed up the parable with one sentence. The man with 20 names changed his face 400 times during the conversation, whereas the man with one never altered his expression. And that's the end of that poem. This next one is called Theravada Bodai Knee Jerk. A bhikkhuni of around 40 years, but the solemnness of 1,000 inside the first refuge of the Triple Gem happened unseen across the daring genus of Phidippus Audax. The spider's pincers were blue like the four noble truths of suffering, cause, end, path, cessation unseen beneath her heel. He was squashed, making tiny screams of trivial sati, screams loud enough to stop the nun noble and the eightfold path, that of the fourth noble truth. The spider's last whispers to her were understanding, thinking, speech, attitude, rights. into that.
Yeah, you've been on some really weird shit recently, man. Really have, man. Some of the shit that I've been reading from you, I don't even know how to interpret it. It's just you're really delving into some different material, and I think you're delving a lot into like medical terminology, thought, parts of the brain, philosophy, and it's really quite interesting to read.
Oh, thanks, man.
Interesting to hear.
I like to think of that last poem as sort of a at the rudimentary level, it's sort of an analysis of how Western medicine and Eastern philosophy can have like a symbiotic relationship, even though that one might be more skewed than the other in certain situations. I think it's something that can possibly happen, and you know, people like Bruce Lee believe that too, you know, like for real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he was very much a combination between East and West, because you know, his mother was American, I believe, and he lived in both San Francisco and Hong Kong, so he had a very, you know, a very interesting duality there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And definitely, I have to say, man, and he's, like, actually one of my biggest influences to start writing. When I was a kid and I heard about him writing the book that outlined Jeet Kune Do, which is, like, probably the greatest martial art ever devised. I mean, I found that really inspiring in itself as a writer.
Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't get enough credit for that. He really doesn't get enough credit for being the thinker that he was.
And he was, man. He was. You can watch any interview with Bruce Lee, and that guy was very articulate and very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very charismatic as well. Very charismatic personality. So.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate that kind of stuff, man. We do. At the Meth Lab, at the Draconian Vampire Tunnel, we appreciate that kind of shit. We do.
Yeah, I know I do.
Okay. Coming up next, you're going to hang out with us still, right? You want to read some more?
Yeah, I'll be around.
I'm down to read some more.
Yeah, I got another one.
All right.
Shit, I got another one if you want.
Yeah, definitely. Sweet. Hold on to that. We're going to play one more song, and then we'll come back. Coming up next, looks like we got Roiksop. This is a song called Apple, right here. Draconian Vampire Tunnel, Closer Repairs. I'm your host, DJ Frankie Flash Metro. We'll be right back. now, 30-second movie reviews and 30-second conspiracy theories with Panifestos, Porntastic, Punhouse, and Stupid Moskowitz.
This is actually a review of Banged Up Abroad, South Korea. The moral of the story is to never send yourself a sleeping bag with a kilo of hash from the Philippines stuffed inside. Especially don't send it registered under your own name, express mail.
Last night, between the hours of 7:30 and 8 p.m. CST, Michigan State Representative Lisa Brown met with agents of Israeli intelligence and special operations organization Mossad. Three discussed future plans for infiltrating sex toy industry of Michigan, replacing all ticklers and ribs of pocket pussies with carbolic acid.
Down this dirt road and in this ditch in the poor province of Balochistan, five young women were buried alive. An ambulance took away the exhumed bodies. The women's crime, wanting to marry for love.
Three women wanted to get married of their own free will and contracted court marriages. Two elderly women helped them. All five were caught, brutally injured and tortured, and then buried alive. And that's how they died.
What was even worse, two members of parliament actually defended the killing.
They stood up on the floor and they said that this is Baloch custom, this is Baloch tradition, and we completely disown that, we condemn that, this is not our culture, you know. And we feel that these are the people who have a criminal mindset and they should not be sitting in our party.
Women are beginning to become aware of their existence, of their humanity, of the equality.
21-year-old Syra Lyquist's husband threw acid on her 5 years ago. Today, she blow-dries and dies. When I look in the mirror, she says, sometimes I get really upset and I think, why me? But since I've started working here, there has been a big change in my life. I have courage and I have hope. Holon's foundation pays for their surgeries.
Because these are the women who actually deserve to be beautiful, to be made, you know, to feel beautiful, inside and outside.
An attempt to empower women, replacing darkness with a reason to smile. For Worldview, I'm Nick Schifrin in Lahore.
Joy Division with 24 Hours. That may have actually been live in France, or I don't know. Could have been live somewhere else. I'm not sure. Could have been live in the Draconian Vampire Tunnel, which it pretty much sounded like it was. Iwamba, are you a Joy Division fan?
I love Joy Division.
Yeah?
Love Will Tear Us Apart is one of my all-time favorite songs.
I love that song, dude. And what's the one?
Yeah.
Oh, God, what is the Atmosphere? I love that shit. That's my favorite. Mm.
Yeah, fucking great, great band.
In Curtis, man. That dude was, like, way ahead of his time, for real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you listen to their stuff now, it doesn't sound dated. It still sounds just as fresh as it did probably back then. Now it just doesn't sound dated, you know? It just sounds so fresh, like it was just made yesterday.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, well, you listen to a lot of bands that are out there right now, and you can hear a lot of influence from Joy Division. You can hear it, man. You really can. We play a lot of them on this show, actually. So, in fact, the XX, that's one that I think, even if they don't want to admit it, I think Joy Division is kind of an influence. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. Hey, before that, actually, you guys, we heard the Venture, not the Ventures, we actually heard Roykstop with Epil, formed in 1998 in Norway, actually, and they're known for some pretty elaborate costumes and stage shows. Those guys actually met as teens with a short interest in film and music and electronic scores. The word Roykstop is actually a stylized version for the word puffball mushroom, and slowly gained popularity in the U.S., but top 40 in the U.K., so there you go. Yeah, good shit, man. I love that shit, and Roykstop probably will be stopping back by, more than likely, as will Nuambo Flamingo. I hope you got something else to read, right?
I do, actually. I have a short poem.
Nice. Sweet.
All right. And this one is called True Love. 1 million poets are scribbling stanzas into notebooks at this very second. 1 million authors are punching keys, completing chapters, computer screens burning their eyes. 1 million teachers wish they could solve ADD, stomp on cell phones, and make their students jump up onto desks screaming, "Oh, captain, my captain!" But 299 million are putting their deepest thoughts into 140 characters or less. But 299 million are laughing at talking baby television commercials and Googling celebrity gossip. But 299 million would require the threat of a firing squad to visit a library. So why does the 1 million bother? The answer shouldn't surprise you.
Yeah. Fuck, man. God damn. Woo! You're doing some good shit over there, bro. You really are. Fuck, man.
Thanks, man. You know, I was off for a while. I didn't write anything really for a few months, and you know, it's good to do that sometimes, though. Just let new ideas come to you and stuff. And so, yeah, I've written a couple things recently. I think some of it's all right. Hopefully, it'll get out there. I've sent it off to a couple places, and hopefully, a couple things will surface.
Nice. I'm looking forward to that. Definitely. I've actually been on a strange kick myself as of late. I've been writing this style called High Bun. Have you ever heard of that?
I have not. Actually, I read one of your pieces of that on Facebook. No, I think two. And I also thought, just like somebody else, that it was some kind of breakfast treat at first. I had no idea what the fuck a High Bun was.
That was one of the things that turned me on about it, because I am a huge honey bun fanatic, which the person that made that comment was Mr. Brian Fuget out there, Mr. Zygote, my coffee.
Yeah.
And I got to say, man, that was like one of the things that turned me on to doing that. I actually learned about this from watching a Gary Snyder video and he was talking about high buns and Basho the poet and whatnot. So I don't know, it made sense to me. What it is, it's a short prose piece. Doesn't have to be linear or complete sentences or what have you. It can be completely stream of consciousness or whatever. And describing a scene or a person, anything. And then you end it with a haiku of sorts. And, yeah, I've been trying my hand at that. So I got one here. I guess this one is sort of like an anti-high bun because it ends with a senryu instead of a haiku. But I'll read this one. This one's called Fields Machete, Richard Pryor, and the Sunset Strip. His machete was serrated, shimmering in the glow of Richard Pryor live on the Sunset Strip. The pink suit of a comedian bleeding out like crimson chrysanthemums in the blade's reflection. Forbidding summer with windows and screen doors riddled with big holes. And that's that.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I got
very
one.
Very interesting, yeah.
Oh. But, I'm sorry, but I didn't mean to cut you off there, Matt. What were you going to say?
But what I was wondering about that is how exactly did Richard Pryor's The Sunset Strip, how did that figure into that piece?
Well, basically, it's a story of a time I was at my weed dealer's house and he pulled out a machete and he's watching The Sunset Strip, Richard Pryor live on The Sunset Strip. And literally, you could see the pink suit and the blade's reflection. And I figured it was like inside the blade's reflection, it was more of a red color. It was like crimson chrysanthemums, you know?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. I got one more here. This one is called New Mexico Speedwalkers. This is another high bun of sorts. The first time I saw his cast, I remembered how 3 days prior he was stopped mid-stride by a hard fucker who muscled him out of the styrofoam plate he copped out of the trash can in front of the bus stop and everything else in his pockets. Someone threatened to call APD before I hear, "You don't have my money, but you can buy something to eat. You better be straight by tomorrow or else." It's been another 3 days since the incident, but the cast remains. And that's it.
Yeah, man, money's a bitch.
Yeah, it is.
Money will make people do some fucked up shit on it.
Yeah, man, like, straight up, that's a true story. I'm not even, that's a goddamn true story. Some scary fucking shit,
well,
man.
It's definitely something I could see happening in Albuquerque.
Yeah. Yep, the cast remains, dude. Not the dude, but the cast remains. Oh, that's the way that works. Yeah. It's a new style. It's, I like them.
Cool. You know, I want to try one of those. Do they have a certain, like, length requirement?
No, not really.
Are they supposed to be just very short?
Yeah, like, I try to, like, border mine around, like, flash fiction pieces sometimes, you know? Like, little bitty flash fiction prose, or you can do, like, just straight stream of consciousness or what have you, and then just end it with, you know, a high bun with a haiku, which is, like, open to interpretation. A lot of people think that, you know, it's 575, but typically, you know, from what I understand, haikus can be, as long as it's like 13 to 17 syllables, you can put it ever how many you want, ever how many lines you want. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Well, you've inspired me. I'm actually going to try a couple of high ones now.
Oh, nice. Sweet, man. Fuck yeah. Hell yeah.
You've inspired me.
Yeah? Fucking A.
Yeah, you have inspired me. So I'm going to try and write one of those.
Maybe we, I was going to talk to you about this. We might... There might be a possibility of a opportunity for a Meth Lab print anthology coming pretty soon. I might have worked out something to where we can make that happen. Got more information on that.
Very intriguing.
Yeah, more information coming on that later. But I was going to say I would like to do some Meth Lab high buns at some point.
I smell a series, man.
Mm.
I smell a series coming on.
Nice.
I smell a series we could do. Maybe July.
Ooh. That's a good idea.
Mm.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, man.
That's right. Totally down.
Cool. Well, we'll work on that.
Right on. You going to hang out with us for a little bit? We still got another 44 minutes left, actually.
Yeah, I can hang out for a little bit longer.
Cool, man. We're going to play another song here. This is, I'm going to play this one. This is L1011. Name of the song is I Like Van Halen Because My Sister Says They're Cool, right here on the Draconian Vampire Tunnel.
Sean was friends with Chris Robertson, so she told him that I liked Chris. Lolly says that his reaction was this: I would fuck her one time, but I wouldn't want her to be my girlfriend. I would never admit to Lolly and Jennifer that I was a virgin, but I told them that I wanted to go ahead and do it. I can't remember if my stepfather intercepted the call or if I stayed up late enough to pick it up on the first ring. Sean might have been on the other line asking, "Do you want to fuck my friend or what?" I said, "What?" And then I heard laughter in the background before they abruptly hung up. All I know about Chris Robertson is that he was tall, lean, and muscular, with blue eyes and black hair, a surly scowl, and a smart-ass mouth. The only thing we had in common is that we were both flunking algebra with Lolly Widener and Jenny Fite, who were getting gangbanged in the desert at a Kager. And then later on, a videotape was distributed around the school.
Hallelujah! They call me Casper. Not the friendly ghost, but the Holy Ghost. Dig! And I'm here to make you shout. Glory be to the one who knows what the funk's about, y'all.
Come on, y'all. Do you?
Bootsy Collins, Stretching Out with the Rubber Band Band. Really dig that shit. Love Bootsy Collins, and of course, Nwanda, are you a Bootsy Collins fan? You a Bootsy fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, dude. And I love Parliament. Oh, Parliament Funkadelic. Some funky motherfuckers.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah, I really dig that stuff. Really, really dig that. And they were so inspirational to so many rappers, especially the G-Funk kind of stuff in the early 90s, which I really dug.
Snoop Dogg being one of those people. Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, that's right. Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
All that stuff. They sampled the Parliament Funkadelic stuff heavily. So,
okay.
Yeah, I really dug that stuff, man. Really, really dug it.
Oh, yeah. Fucking A. We got about 30 minutes left of the show. I think, I don't know, I was going to ask if you had one more selection, if you felt like another read.
You know what? I could do one more, man. I got one. I got an old one I want to read. Something I haven't read in a long time. You might recognize from about 3 years ago. More than 3 years ago now.
Oh, a throwback.
Called. Yeah, a little throwback, man. I haven't read this in a while. I think I'll go ahead and read it. It's called My Psychiatrist is a Gangster Rapping Leprechaun Who Does Yoga and Is a Total Spaz. And here it goes. Recently, I've been putting on sexy lingerie underneath my trench coat and going out into the crowded South Beach streets, flashing people and then smacking them in the face with a fly swatter whilst yelling, "Don't take my pretzels!" Obviously, this has gotten me into quite some trouble, and more than one or two acquaintances have recommended that I seek help forth with my underlying issues. This behavior really started when a poet named Raskin broke into my apartment when I was away at my weekly ballet lesson and abducted the ghost from my refrigerator. I found the number for a psychiatrist, Dr. McGinty, written on the bathroom wall at Denny's and decided to give him a call. He lives on the other. Baboons. When I get to his office for my appointment, I see a grizzly bear by the name of Ron Edwards with full riot gear on, dancing the Macarena in the waiting room. Which looks like a yoga studio. Dr. McGinty is in there hanging upside down from the ceiling like a bat, speaking in gibberish and doing sign language to no one I could see. He looks like a leprechaun, talks like a pirate, and when he sees me, he starts rapping a 50 Cent song entitled In the Club. I rap it with him and tell him how my other psychiatrist never let me gangster rap during therapy. I very much enjoy gangster rapping. I gangster rap in the shower and to old ladies in elevators a lot. Dr. McGinty does a backflip down from the ceiling, then starts doing yoga. I join in. We do the flaming monkey position, and he starts to tell me the secret to not flashing people my thongs in public anymore. All of a sudden, a waterspout from the bay outside his office breaks onto land. Crashing through the window, it hoists Dr. McGinty away. It spares Jabba and me, though. We're both unharmed but alarmed. So then, for absolutely no apparent reason, we both start breakdancing and doing somersaults. Yeah, I think I'll need to go back to the toilet at Denny's and find another psychiatrist. That's that piece.
And, of course, if you guys want to, you know, you can always go to YouTube, and check out a live performance of that poem that Mr. Nwab was reading. I remember that one. I'm very fond of that piece, sir. Very fond of that one.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, yeah. It was based on a true story.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really did used to go out into the streets of South Beach and hit people with fly swatters.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I used to do that shit sometimes, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, they didn't really like it, though. They didn't really like it. And my psychiatrist didn't really like it either. They would get very angry with me for doing this. But still, it was fun, and I enjoyed it. And, you know, as long as I could outrun the person. Because, like, you know, sometimes the people would be very angry, and they would try to hit me or kick me. Sometimes they would hit me or kick me.
Yeah.
But
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. You hear me?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, man. I got to cut you off there. My bad.
Yeah, but, yeah, you know, it was fun. Things like that happen in South Beach a lot.
I can see that happening a lot, to be honest with you. Living in Florida, I am familiar with people and their attitudes during... I'm assuming this. You did this a lot during the summer months, I'm assuming.
Oh, of course. And the summer months are the best there because there aren't a lot of tourists. So it's just the locals. And the locals are really fucking weird. So it's just all the really, you know, the most weirdest people, like, ever in Florida during the summer. So it's great. I really like it there.
Nice. Good. I love that endorsement. Of course, everybody go to Florida. Tell them New Mamba sent you. And be prepared to get kicked and swatted with a fly swatter. Shit will happen.
Yeah. Or have your face eaten. Too. So now we have zombies there eating people's faces.
Yeah. Dude, did you see that guy's face? Did you see that guy's face afterwards? Like,
yeah, it's fucked up.
That's fucking brutal, man. Zombie apocalypse is here, everybody. These motherfuckers are watching they're watching too many episodes of The Walking Dead and doing bath salt and man. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, people should just smoke weed. I mean, I don't think anybody's ever eaten another person's face after smoking weed.
No.
You might eat a lot of Doritos or something. Mm-hmm. But are you gonna eat somebody's face? I don't know.
I'll tell you the truth, man. If I'm around you and I'm smoking a lot of weed, I'll eat your honey bun. I won't eat your face, but I'll eat your honey bun. Straight up.
Dude, you're welcome to, man. You're welcome to eat my honey. Just don't eat my face. I'll be fucking angry with you if you do that.
Okay, all right. I promise I won't do
that. I'll delete you on Facebook. I'll delete you from my friends. My friends list. If you eat my face, I'll fucking delete you.
Oh, man. And then I'm not going to exist anymore. Like, damn it. Shit. Fuck, dude. All right, you talked me into it. All right. I'll just stick with the honey bun this time. I can't promise for the next time, though. I'm not making any promises.
All right. Well, I'll wear a fucking Hannibal Lecter mask around you.
Okay. That sounds like a good idea.
Get up my face.
Yeah,
it works.
I got one I'll read, man, before we get ready to close out the show. This one is a little advanced sneak peek, a column of Left-Handed Smoker, currently at Red Fez. You guys can go to www.redfez.net, of course, and check out that, as well as other great columns like Strawberry Bitch by Lynn Alexander and Dispatches from Atlantis by Paul Coleman Roberts and what have you. This particular one, I'll just go ahead and read it. Fuck it. It was one of those feudal arguments on the front porch of El Portal. Don't look at me while I'm eating like a monster. One that was a projected cover for sexual tension, heat exhaustion, dehydration, and sleep deprivation. I'm not looking at you like a monster. I'm looking at you like a science experiment. Since the Tricentennial Summer Fest was taking place across the street in Washington Park all the way to 2nd, and not excluding Knob Hill, every inch of sidewalk outside was littered with people having too much fun for their own good. Are you crying? Seriously? No, Lisa replied with her right hand hiding her eyes from further scrutiny. I'm trying not to look at you eating, just like you said. Inside the hostel were L.A. resident nuclear families, Brazilian backpackers with no work visas, and a lonely Vietnam vet who made his own jewelry. Everyone, myself included, had a waft of minute B.O. and athlete's feet. I didn't say that. I said, don't eat while looking at me like a... Wait. Shit. That's not what I said. Fuck you. Lisa laughed so loud, pedestrians turned their attention to the uproar. She held both hands over her mouth so as not to spit any more egg in my face. A Brazilian was sitting in the common area, thumbing through one out of 7 copies of People's Magazine on the coffee table when the vet happened upon him emerging from the dining area with plain white toast and coffee in hand. It was a modest interruption that soon changed tempo and became the usual discourse, where are you from, how long has it been, what brings you to Albuquerque, stuff of that nature. It seemed that the vet was staying up near White Sands, New Mexico, and had left just before the wildfires had really started. And while he was there, he had visited the Trinity site where the first atomic bomb was tested in 1945. Being a man somewhat overly sensitive to the history of war and weapons, the vet talked about the absurdity of our government declaring the fallout zone a national landmark, but was rather surprised how mild the weather had been in April, and definitely not what he had expected. After leaving White Sands, he hitchhiked the rest of the way to Albuquerque, stopping in to see friends in Taos and Santa Fe along the way. His buddy Rich had given him his choice of the couch or the floor in his studio apartment for a couple of nights, where they talked about the war, White Sands, nuclear mutants, and the like. The vet went into further detail for the Brazilian, talking about the same story as Rich, where in the end he made a real statement and flicked the butt of a non-filtered camel over the fence with a posted forbearing sign that read, "The use of eating, drinking, chewing, and smoking materials and the application of cosmetics is prohibited within the fenced area, per AMC Regulation 385-25. Brazilian rolled his eyes unnoticed to the vet before the outlaw heritage in the Southwest became the issue. Apparently, at one point, Rich became uncomfortable about the discussion of nuclear test sites and shifted attention to the long history of horse thieves, cattle ranchers, cattle wranglers, bank robbers, and murderers who called New Mexico either home or the grave. The vet relayed the slightly embellished tale of the Mez gang killed just outside of White Sands by the John Kennedy gang on the first day of autumn 1875, according to the East Asian Solar Term. The Brazilian's eyes widened with clear disbelief while the vet continued going on to talk about the past of Albuquerque and outlaws like Pantaleon Miata, another horse thief and murderer who was hung from a Bernalillo cottonwood tree 3 days after Christmas in 1880. The father of L.A. walked into the conversation unaware of the cottonwood tree's context and raised his eyebrows with that expression that says, "When was I committed to the sanitarium?" Amazingly, or because of the volume of the vet's voice, I had heard the entirety of the conversation. And when the father of L.A. walked out of the common area and exited the building, passing Lisa and myself with the same expression and additional shakes of the head, I looked at him in the eye and shrugged with the absolution everything the vet had to say was going nowhere. But it had sparked some interesting contrasts and comparisons for us as Lisa and I began spinning our own fictitious yarns about nuclear outlaw mutants camping out at the Centennial Summerfest territorial area. We made up fantastic hypotheses concerning the White Sands fires and how the rapid progression of the inferno could possibly be attributed to nuclear waste lying dormant in the topsoil, and that the resulting fires would cause a toxic emission of smoke that could be seen encroaching over the bowl of Albuquerque. We questioned whether the fires were related to the dead outlaws of San Agustin Ranch, whether the nuclear tests in the past couldn't interact with the remnants of decomposed grifters, and how we could possibly see signs of radioactive phantom exposure, and soon Burcaños would be the ones on the news devouring the faces of the unaffected and looting the branches of Wells Fargo. I'll just stop there.
Fuck, man. That's some cerebral shit right there.
It's hard to read when you're
digging on that.
Say what? I'm sorry, what?
Ah, man, I was really digging on that.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
Very, very vivid pictures you paint with those words, man.
Yeah?
You really, like, see the people and the places very well.
Oh, sweet. Thanks, man. That's kind of what, yeah, it's like exactly what I'm shooting for, so I appreciate that. Fuck yeah. Like, I just want it to be like, if I don't have a video camera and I can't make movies, like, I might as well just make them in a notebook, you know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, man, well, that's what writing's all about, dude. Like, way before they had video cameras and cameras and all that stuff, they just had pens and paper or even just some dude drawing or writing on a cave wall.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know?
Yeah, it's true. Fucking A, man. I'm fucking always glad when you come around, Nuwamba. It's always a pleasure having you on the show, man. We need to get this Meth Lab radio show going, for reals.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking maybe next week sometime.
Yeah?
Next week we ought to do this. Let's put our heads together on this and communicate and try to figure something out for next week.
Sounds good. Definitely. I'm totally down for that. So, I think what we're going to do is we're going to probably close out the show. I do have a secret song of the evening. I'm not going to mention what that is, but of course, you guys, if you are listening in the archives now, you can definitely hang out and listen for that. But I think the last thing that I'm going to do before smoking some recon strain, as I like to call it, I'm going to play... This is a song, and Nuwamba, before I mention this, I do, like I mentioned before, really appreciate you coming by, brother, and please come back next time.
Hey, man. Dude, much love, man. Had a fun time. Cool show.
Hell yeah. It was a good show. I appreciate it. This one's for the Meth Lab and everybody that contributed to the Meth Lab ever. This is DeBry. The song is called Hyped Up Plus Tax. Catch you guys next week.
I knew any intelligent people at all. I blame it on Arizona, where it's one of the dumbest, most ignorant states in the union. I'm not sure when the first time I might have actually had an intelligent conversation might have been. All the boys and I had crushes on in high school I never even spoke to. I never even had an intelligent conversation, especially with not with a guy. Who knows what I talked to my 2 to 4 friends about. Then I moved to Chicago and I met Mike DeCenzio. He was one of the most interesting guys I'd ever met, but that's probably because he was in the preliminary phases of schizophrenia. But he was the first guy I liked who read books. I was unaware that his recommendation of Dianetics was a red flag. We shared a fascination with witchcraft, cults, aliens, and the Illuminati. Mike DeCenzio wasn't interested in me, romantically. He preferred wayfish brunettes with fairy or elfin qualities. My dad talks to his mom once in a while. He always says he's not doing so well.